time for Shouts from the Back Row, the official podcast of the-back-row.com. My name is Gil, and I'm your host. And with me, as always, are my co-hosts Robin.
Hello.
And TK.
Hello.
In the year 2000, 20th Century Fox released X-Men, and in doing so, launched a cinematic universe based on a Marvel property years before the Marvel Cinematic Universe. X-Men had an impressive cast, including Patrick Stewart, Famke Janssen, and Halle Berry, but at the forefront of the franchise was a largely unknown Australian actor named Hugh Jackman. Now, here we are almost 17 years later, the X-Men are still going on adventures, and Hugh Jackman is one of the biggest movie stars in the world today. Just last year we got X-Men Apocalypse, which had a cameo from Hugh Jackman, and Deadpool. And this year, Jackman and Stewart reprised their roles, for what appears to be the last time, in Logan. So for all that Marvel Studios gets the credit for being the king of superhero movies, the X-Men movies have been around for much longer and launched some pretty impressive careers, and there's so much to talk about. It's high time we talk about these movies. So on this show, we'll be discussing the X-Men franchise and giving our thoughts on each and every film up to and including Logan. Right after this. The Back Row is dedicated to delivering free entertainment to everyone in the forms of media culture blogging, movie reviews, short films, podcasts, and more. That's awesome, I hear you say, and you're right, it is awesome. So why don't you help us out by subscribing to our podcast on iTunes and leaving a review? Just search the iTunes store for Shouts from the Back Row to subscribe to our feed, and if you're feeling generous, visit the-back-row.com and click the donate button to send us a few bucks. Your support means the world to us. We like to open the show with a discussion of what we've been up to. This is a place for us to talk about movies we've been watching, TV shows we've been following, games we've been playing, and just about everything else we've been doing. So, Robin, what have you been up to?
Well, last week went on to vacation to Arizona, so that's where most of my time has been. It was mostly to go see some spring training baseball down there, and can't believe I'm saying this, but I saw the World Series defending champion Chicago Cubs, which was pretty amazing because that's where they have their spring training, and it was perfect weather down there, and I apparently picked the right week to go down there because it was freezing cold in Ottawa that particular week, so I wasn't too happy to get back to the freezing cold Canada. But while I was down there, I did get a chance to see a new movie, and that was Kong, Skull Island, and I thought it was pretty fun. I know we saw the trailer when it came out last year and thought the movie looked batshit crazy. It really wasn't batshit crazy. It was pretty standard stuff, like John C. Reilly's character was a little out there, but otherwise it was a pretty traditional monster movie, but it was an entertaining monster movie. I will admit that most of the characters were kind of dull. Tom Hiddleston, he was the leading man. He couldn't have been even... His character couldn't have been less interesting if they tried. Unfortunately, the only real cool character, of course, was John C. Reilly, who totally stole the show in every scene he was in and had a pretty cool epilogue during the end credits, which I thought was pretty nice. But the movie delivered the goods through the monster sequences. I thought the special effects in this were first rate, and the monster fighting each other scenes really delivered the goods. I thought they were right up there with stuff like pretty much up there with, like, the original King Kong. I thought they were so well done. And I kind of like that they pretty much devoted the entire story being on Skull Island this time around. Like, they didn't just remake it and tell the standard story of Kong being taken off the island and running amok through New York City. They gave you more about, like, the whole Skull Island thing and kind of showed Kong more as a character. So it was pretty entertaining to watch, and I'd happily watch more monster movies featuring Kong if they were like this, because I know they're planning to turn it into a spin-off, possibly Kong versus Godzilla. So yeah, it delivered what I was expecting, nothing more, nothing less, and as long as the monster fighting each other scenes were good, that's all I can really complain about. So that's all I can really hope for. So I guess I would recommend going to see it.
I also saw Kong Skull Island, and I agree with a lot of your points. And sadly to me, those monster fights just weren't enough. Like, I really loved the monster fights. I really loved the designs of the monsters, because there are a lot of really cool ones throughout the movie. It's not just Kong, but it's also these, they call them skull crawlers. They're sort of these lizard-like creatures. And there's also, like, a giant stick bug and a giant ox. And they all look great, but in the end, it's, I don't know, they don't play as big of a part as I was hoping for. Like, I was really hoping for a whole lot of cool monsters to show up throughout the whole movie. And, like, we're told there are hundreds of these skull crawler monsters throughout the island, but you only really see, like, two or three of them, and they all pretty much look the same, even, like, the bigger, crazier ones that you see later in the movie. But the special effects were great, the monster designs were great, it's just there was really no story. I went into this hoping that it would be like a fun adventure movie, almost maybe like the Stephen Sommers Mummy movies, especially because Tom Hiddleston looked like he was playing that kind of character, like sort of like a Nathan Drake, Rick O'Connell, Indiana Jones knockoff character with his suspenders and his machine guns and rolled up sleeves, but... like, I can't even remember his name. He was not noteworthy at all. And Brie Larson, I like her, and I thought her character had, I don't know, some heart to her, I suppose you could say. But, again, she's just not given a lot to work with. She's not given enough to say. John Goodman is wasted. Like, the character side of things so let me down that I really... There were no stakes to the monster fighting sequences, as impressive as they were. So for me, Kong Skull Island was kind of a letdown. Like, it wasn't a terrible movie, and John C. Reilly was really good, but I don't know. It almost felt like it felt just kind of slapped together. And Robin, you were talking about how you want to see, you know, Kong versus Godzilla and all that. Did you stay through the credits?
Unfortunately, I did not. I did not find out about it till afterwards. I was watching it with my dad, and he's not the kind of guy who would want to stay through the entire credits, so I didn't see it, unfortunately.
Just as a side note, what did your dad think of it?
He thought it was enjoyable enough. Like, he doesn't go to a lot of movies. He mainly just went because I saw it, but he did enjoy the monster fights, but I think he would agree that the characters in it weren't anything special.
Anyway, the end credits scene, there's a Marvel style stinger at the end of the end credits. I guess they're doing the Monsterverse, or they're trying the Kaijuverse. And, you know, this is another example of just sort of like the slap together cardboard cutout nature of this movie, because instead of showing us Godzilla or Mothra or King Ghidorah, the three-headed dragon, they instead show you, like, a slideshow. It's Tom Hiddleston and Brie Larson, and they've been taken in, and they're like, you know, these officials are like, there are monsters everywhere, and they show them just, like, a slideshow of these monsters. I don't know. That moment kind of reminded me of Batman versus Superman, where we got, like, a little PowerPoint presentation about the upcoming Justice League superheroes. So, sadly, I did not like Kong Skull Island as much as you. Even though I do acknowledge the monster fights were pretty cool. One thing I do,
well, you do
have
bring
to
up a good.
Oh, sorry. One last thing is this design of King Kong is a more upright, like he stands upright like a human. And I don't know about you, and he's much bigger. He's like 100 feet tall. So I don't know about you, but I just found it kind of weird that he didn't have like genitalia at that size. Like, it's kind of strange. I'm not saying I want to see a giant, you know, gorilla penis, but it's less noticeable when he's like a 40-foot ape than it is when he's 100 feet tall. Anyway, what were you going to say, Robin?
Yeah, well, I do agree that, like, I think one of the reasons you might feel let down is because it did have an outstanding cast, and they did get most of these great actors to play kind of one-note, boring characters, so that is the problem with it, but it is still a fun time overall. And one thing I forgot to mention is, since I just mentioned the Chicago Cubs, there's a whole running gag throughout this film, because it takes place in the 1970s, that John C. Reilly is a big Chicago Cubs fan, and he's asking, oh, did they watch the World Series, win the World Series while I was stranded on this island? And they joke around saying they will never win the World Series again, and of course, pretty timely considering what just happened. I can expect a lot of movies to be making Chicago Cubs jokes over the next couple years.
And what's great is we have a huge backlog of movies also making fun of the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, it's pretty good. The world's quite a different place right now since that happened this past fall. Pretty hilarious.
But I like that that the jokes are still that the Cubs will never win the World Series. Like, before they won, you had stuff like Armageddon or Back to the Future where they're making fun of the Cubs not winning. And now that they've won, people are still making fun of the Cubs not winning.
It's true, yeah. I wonder if they, like, these lines were in the original script or they decided to add them in post, like, after it actually happened. So I can expect to see a lot more incidents of this in movies. And as far as what other movies I've seen, I actually finally saw a movie this week that was legitimately batshit insane, because I mentioned it 2 weeks ago after finding out about it, and I just had to watch it. It was a movie called The Assignment, where directed by Walter Hill, believe it or not, which stars Sigourney Weaver as a mad doctor who kidnaps Michelle Rodriguez, who plays a contract killer who's a man, and gives him gender reassignment surgery to turn him into a woman who looks like Michelle Rodriguez. And my jaw pretty much dropped when I heard about this film, so I had to check it out this week. Sadly, I have to say the first 30 minutes of it or so are pure batshit goodness before it kind of becomes dull and generic. But I'm just going to say this right out. I mentioned it before, but in the beginning of this film, Michelle Rodriguez actually plays the male character with a beard, and 10 minutes into the movie, she has her own crying game moment where she steps out of the shower and she's got a hairy flat chest and you actually see a penis, believe it or not. And
oh my God.
Yeah. And the problem is that when you do that in the first 10 minutes of the film, you can't really top that for batshit insanity. And a couple minutes after that, she actually has a sex scene with a woman. So you get to see Michelle Rodriguez with a hairy chest and a beard having sex with a woman in that. And I wonder if there's somebody out there who's turned on by that, because that's about as weird as a fetish thing I've ever seen in a mainstream Hollywood film. It's pretty weird, but sadly, after she gets the gender assignment surgery and becomes a woman, the movie just kind of becomes generic. It's trying to be like a Sin City type of thing, like a pulp novel where they have like frames of like comic book stills and stuff like that, and she has the gritty, hard-boiled narration, and then she goes on a revenge spree killing people, but it's not quite as interesting after that. It's just kind of your standard revenge film. Sigourney Weaver, I gotta say, she tries her best. She really camps it up here. She gives like a lot of like crazy speeches and stuff about how this surgery she performed is gonna change the world and stuff like that, but it doesn't really lead to anything interesting and just kind of fizzles out. It's kind of funny to read the backstory of this movie and how it's based on a screenplay that was originally written back in 1978, back when gender reassignment surgery and sex change surgery just wasn't as common and would be seen as this horrific thing. So it's kind of funny how they tried to update this to like to 2017. And of course, a lot of the transgender community are kind of pissed at this film that they would take like this whole being captured against your will and being turned into a woman to be like this horrible experience to go through and stuff. So this kind of premise really doesn't fly today. And unfortunately, like, Michelle Rodriguez's character really isn't that sympathetic either, because she's an evil contract killer, and just because she's been turned into a woman doesn't mean you should sympathize with her, because she's still kind of evil. There really isn't anyone to root for in this film, and that's kind of the problem. So I guess it's worth watching out of curiosity value, but if it had maintained the tone of the first 20-30 minutes and kept it going throughout the rest of the film, this might have become a cult classic, but sadly it's just kind of fade into a footnote. So, but I think thus far I would say this is easily the most batshit movie I've seen in 2017.
My God, it just sounds so misguided. What the hell? I haven't had a chance to see this yet, but I totally intend to, because, I mean, I like Walter Hill, man. He's directed some good movies, and this one just sounds like, it just sounds terrible. And yeah, I had also read that he's had the script kicking around for so long that now the very premise of it is not only outdated, but downright offensive. And yet somehow this movie got greenlit. I kind of need to witness it for myself. But, oh man, that just sounds problematic. It sounds very problematic. Is Michelle Rodriguez a convincing man?
Not at all. Like, you watch her, and it's so obvious it's Michelle Rodriguez with a beard. Like, it's kind of like they don't even, they try to give her a more, like, masculine voice because she already has one, but it's like, just looking at her, you could never, like, buy her as, like, a man. It's not like Hillary Swank and Boys Don't Cry or anything like that. So it's a pretty misguided idea to begin with.
And why, I mean, I'm sure this is explained in the movie, but why would this vengeful surgeon turn him into a woman instead of, like, blinding him or doing something that would prevent him from killing people, right? Like, this is revenge for murder. Why, like, remove his hands or, like, why this? Because there's really nothing stopping him or her from continuing to exact vengeance. I just don't understand.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because that's what they attempt during the climax. She gets kidnapped again, and Sigourney Weaver says she's going to do an operation where she removes her arms. And it's like, why did you do that in the first place?
Yeah. What, like, first I'm going to make you a woman, then I'm going to remove your arms. I have a few questions.
Don't look for logic in this movie. But sadly, I looked up Walter Hill's filmography, and he really has not done a good movie in, like, over 20 years. So this is really bottom of the barrel for him. So if you want to see his films, go back and watch The Warriors and all his classics from the 70s and 80s. Stay away from this one. And I also want to give another shout out. I've released two more episodes of The Trail Went Cold, and this week's minisode is probably one of the most baffling murders I've ever chronicled on the podcast, involving the murder of a guy named Matt Flores, who was shot in the back of the head at his workplace parking lot in broad daylight with 20 witnesses around, and nobody has any idea why. It's funny, TK listened to the first few minutes just before we sat down to record these podcasts, and he just kind of had a WTF reaction, like, how did this happen in front of 20 witnesses and nobody saw anything? So it's a very intriguing and really chilling case, so I'd highly recommend checking out this week's latest minisode. And yeah, that's all I've been up to.
TK, what have you been up to?
What have I been up to? I caught John Wick 2, which I enjoyed. The more I think about it, the more I kind of enjoyed it a little less than the first one. Although I think, Gil, last time we were talking about it, you enjoyed the kind of like the Assassin's world that kind of recreated itself in this.
To a degree.
Which I liked. But I don't know. I like the first film more. I actually thought the fight scenes in the first film were a lot better than in this one. But overall, I enjoyed it. I'm interested to see where John goes for the third film, which they are obviously going to make. Because they have to. There's no way they can leave that one just off the way they did.
I liked John Wick 2 about the same as John Wick 1, because all I look for in these movies, like, John Wick 1 set the stage with a very simple plot, but it established these types of films as just, like, simple sort of plot involving John Wick taking out revenge, you know, exacting revenge upon the people who wronged him, and in the background there's this weird, like, underworld of assassins that has its own rules and economy and all that, and that's kind of intriguing, but, you know, it's just sort of like the icing on an action movie cake. And while I did enjoy the extra, like, assassin world elements of John Wick 2, it's one of those things where if you look at it too hard, it really doesn't make any sense. I'm not clear on the gold coins. Like, a gold coin can get you, like, a room at a hotel, but, like, 4 gold coins can get you a gun or something like that. I don't know. How does that work? But, yeah, I mean, I still found it to just be an entertaining movie.
I just finished the Banner Saga 2, which is a cliffhanger ending. Beautiful animation, stunning gameplay. The third Banner Saga just finished its Kickstarter a while back, and I highly recommend you jump on the wagon. Because it's an excellent series. Gil, I know you've played this, and both of us have really enjoyed this over the past, since the first game.
I absolutely adore the Banner Saga games. The first one was just really well made. It's like one part XCOM, one part Oregon Trail in terms of gameplay, with a really nice visual style that's evocative of, like, maybe 1970s era animation with, you know, like a hard line and just the style of the character designs. And it's all steeped in this sort of spin on Norse mythology. Just really solid game. But Banner Saga 2 is where the story aspect of the game really kicks off in a big way. And by the end of Banner Saga 2, I was just so engaged and invested in all the characters and all the plots and subplots going on that when it ended, and it does end on a big cliffhanger, I was just like floored. I was so impressed and just stunned by it. It's fantastic storytelling. It's really terrific fantasy storytelling.
Yeah,
and
it's
great gameplay
fantastic
on top of that.
And I am just waiting in anticipation for the third one at this point. Also, Samurai Jack is back. And I've caught the first couple episodes that have gone by. Gil, I know you're a fan of Tartakovsky's animation, so have you caught up with Samurai Jack at all?
I have indeed, and the new episodes are terrific. Only two have come out, and so it's hard to really compare them to the old episodes in terms of quality. Like, I'm not going to say, like, and it's better than ever, but it is at least as good as it has ever been. And now that the show is on Adult Swim, it can go to slightly more mature places. You know, Jack does not have to only kill robots like he did when Samurai Jack was more of a children's cartoon. And now that it's back, they can take advantage of HD TV resolutions that weren't around in, like, 2003 when they started out, or when they finished, rather. And so the animation has just gotten crisper and nicer. The art design is just as amazing as it ever was. The storytelling's great. Jack is back. Like, it really feels like a natural continuation of the show where, you know, they change just enough to make it distinct from the series that has come before it, but it still feels just as familiar and fun. So two episodes in and I'm just loving it. It's Samurai Jack is as good as ever. I really hope that they don't do just one season of this. Like, I hope it continues on into the future because it's awesome. It's so good. What do you think, TK?
I'm so glad that Phil LaMarr is back doing the voice of Samurai Jack. I have noticed that because the original voice actor for Aku passed away a couple of years ago.
Mako passed away, sadly.
Yeah. And I do notice a difference in the Aku voice, but I find this very dark. And, like, to be perfectly frank, not that I was expecting it to go in any other direction, but I found the second episode in particular fairly grim. So I am interested to see how it portrays over the next handful of episodes. I've seen a bunch of people online saying that they enjoyed the second episode, like, a lot better than some of the original Samurai Jack episodes, and I can't say I agree with them quite yet. Like, I am enjoying them, and there was a very well-done fight scene between Jack and several people in that temple that did a lot of light, dark imagery very well. But I'm still a big fan of the original series as of right now, so I'm not quite sure where it's going to land in my ranking of everything. But I am enjoying it. I'm just glad there's new episodes out so we can see where the storyline's going.
I mean, I honestly feel like there's no point in trying to distinguish whether the new season is better than the old season, because the series has maintained a really high standard of quality throughout, and so far, I find that it has continued to maintain that standard of quality. Like, the new episodes are just as enjoyable to me. And for all that the second episode of season 5 was pretty dark, the first one was really fun. There was that Scaramouche, the scatting android assassin who could make his sword fly around.
Yeah, he reminded me of there's a character from the first couple seasons of Samurai Jack called Das Samurai, and he kind of reminded me of him a little bit, which I kind of enjoyed. No, he's a good villain for the few minutes he was on screen. I was pretty happy with it. But overall, I'm just excited to see where the season goes and what storylines they take through. And again, like you, I'm very interested to see how many seasons they drag it out. But it'll be fun to see. And other than that, gentlemen, I'm afraid that's all I've been up to. Gil, what have you been doing?
So besides Samurai Jack, besides Kong Skull Island, I've taken in a couple of movies. I went to the Trash Palace here in Toronto, and the Trash Palace is a monthly film society where we congregate in the back of a place called CineCycle, which is a like a movie appreciation house with a screening room in the back, but it's also a bicycle repair shop. And the proprietors of the Trash Palace, now in their 10th year, they just screen stuff on 16 millimeter celluloid, just whatever they have, whatever they feel like doing. And so this month we watched a movie called Fuzz with Burt Reynolds and Raquel Welch. And you would, it's billed as like, if you looked at the poster, you would think that this was like, I don't know, maybe like Police Academy, you know, it's cops, but they're, maybe like, you know, sex romp, comedy, sexcapades, slapstick, stuff like that. This is what you'd anticipate if you looked up this movie and, you know, like watched the trailer and looked at the poster. But the movie itself, which is really not good, is it's like one part Police Academy, but then it's also like one part The Wire. Like it's half funny, goofy stuff, and then it's also half like dry, serious police procedural. And the movie is pretty weird. It also has a young Tom Skerritt as one of the detectives. And there's Burt Reynolds, and like how to describe it? It's such a mishmash of plots and ideas that I don't know. It's a real messy movie. Like there is a through plot which involves this guy, you know, calling in bomb threats and threatening to kill politicians, and so the cops have to act on this and try to like lure the guy out and, you know, see if meeting his ransom demands will cause him to stop the attacks, things like that. The bomber is played by Yul Brynner. But there are all these little side plots, like Raquel Welch has to deal with all these weirdos who come into the precinct. There's one woman who, they make her the butt of all the jokes. Like, this is played as though it's this hilarious joke, but she comes in and she keeps talking about this Dracula-like character whom she refers to as a rape artist who will show up and sexually assault her. And, like, the police station is acting like she's nuts and it's hilarious, but it's so awkward because it's this woman saying, like, this weird man dressed in, like, a tuxedo and a cloak keeps coming into my room at night and sexually assaulting me. It is just so, it is so strange. Like, it is such a weird tone that they go for. And like when it starts, you find out that Burt Reynolds, who's barely in the movie, he's this detective who's trying to solve a case of who is lighting homeless people on fire in the city. And in order to do this, he dresses up like a bum. And so the first scene is like him dressed up like a bum in the police precinct. And you think, oh, this is going to be, it's Burt Reynolds. And you're like, oh, this is going to be hilarious. But then he does get set on fire and he's hospitalized. And you find out that his wife is a deaf mute. And there's this like whole thing about prejudice towards people with disabilities while he's recovering from being burned by hoodlums. But then the next scene, he's dressing up like a nun to try to lure out this bomber. It is just, it is such an utter mess. So I do not recommend Fuzz, but boy, what a strange movie. Like, I was really puzzled by what, like, just trying to figure out what this movie was going for. Robin, perchance have you seen Fuzz?
I've not actually seen it, but I remember reading about this while I was researching one of the true crime articles for Listverse, because apparently the first time this movie aired on television, there were copycat crimes where people were pouring gasoline on homeless people and trying to set them on fire. So this movie had to get, like, pulled off television for a while, because for whatever reason, people thought that was a cool scene and wanted to mimic it, even though, like you said, it's a comedy, but that sounds like a pretty dark scene. So that's pretty much his lasting legacy, pretty much, that whole controversy. It's very bizarre.
Yeah, I think everything about this movie is just kind of weird and doesn't really work. I really don't know what to make of it. So I can't in good conscience recommend Fuzz, but if you watch it, I'd love to hear your thoughts, because it is just so strange. Like, nobody at this screening knew what to make of it in the end. We were all just so confused as to whether it was trying to be a serious dramatic police procedural or some kind of wacky comedy. Like, there's a pair of characters who are painters painting the police precinct, and, like, all their scenes are slapstick comedy where they're spilling paint on the chief, and, you know, they're answering the phones instead of the cops, and, like, they are right out of Police Academy, but it just, they don't fit with anything else that's going on. There's a scene where they're trying to...
I love the way...
Sorry, what?
I just thinking, I love the way you described it as a cross between Police Academy and The Wire, and now I'm trying to visualize, like, The Wire with Michael Winslow making his funny sound effects during all those scenes.
That's the greatest thing I've ever heard. That's fantastic.
That would probably be better, but here's an example that's not unlike Police Academy meets The Wire. They're trying to lure out this bomber, played by Yul Brynner, and they've left the ransom where he asked for it, and Burt Reynolds is dressed up like a nun. They're all in a park. Burt Reynolds is dressed up like a nun. Tom Skerritt and Raquel Welch are in a sleeping bag, and they basically are acting like they're having sex in the middle of this public park as all of these people monitor the ransom money, the ransom money to see if Yul Brynner will turn up. And then someone does come and pick up the ransom money, and Burt Reynolds is running around, you know, dressed like a nun, and Tom Skerritt and Raquel Welch can't find their way out of the sleeping bag because the zipper's pulled. But the end result of this is a politician dies. in this really dramatic way. Man, I don't know. What a strange film. And then the other thing that I watched is I watched this movie called The Autopsy of Jane Doe, which is a horror movie wherein Brian Cox and Emile Hirsch play father and son morticians. It's the family business. They're like undertakers and morticians, and they have this crematorium and like mortuary all attached to their house. And the film takes place over the course of one night, where a very strange body is brought into the morgue. It's a Jane Doe, and she has, like, alabaster white perfect skin, and all these signs of injury, like a fractured ankle, and her internal organs have all this scarring and burns on it. But from the outside, her body is in perfect condition. There's not a scratch or bruise on her anywhere, like just no external signs of wounding. And so, of course, the two morticians are very puzzled by this and start performing an autopsy. And as they perform the autopsy, things just get weirder and weirder from there. More questions are raised. And it turns out to be just a really effective little horror movie set in basically one location. It's the basement of this crematorium, mortuary slash house. And it's great. It's really good. I'll say that some of the scares feel a little cheap at times. Like, there is it was just the cat jump scare at one point. But aside from those cliches, like, Brian Cox and Emile Hirsch are good actors. We've seen them in plenty of other things to know that these guys are both talented individuals. They play their roles really well. They're basically the entire cast. Like, there are some side characters, but it's really all about those two actors. And the plot is really tight. It's really well written. And I should say, too, that the movie is only 90 minutes long. So it's like this tight little 90-minute horror movie. Some great makeup effects. The autopsy, of course, is suitably gory and really revels in how gross, you know, everything is, like pulling out an internal organ and watching it slop into a pan. So if you like horror movies, I think you should check this one out. It's great. The Autopsy of Jane Doe. Have either of you guys heard of this movie?
I have heard of it, but I haven't seen it yet.
Big recommendation. I think you would probably both enjoy it to some degree. I know TK is not as keen on horror as you are, Robin, but I would recommend it to both of you. TK, I know that you like both those actors at very least.
It's true, so maybe I could be convinced.
And that is all I've been up to. So now let's talk about the X-Men franchise. Like I said in the intro, while I was thinking of the series, it really struck me how this was this is the original Marvel Cinematic Universe, you know, this multi-movie franchise with all these different spin-offs and different casts. You know, you even have multiple actors playing the same characters at different points in their life across multiple movies. It's really interesting to think that X-Men sort of launched or relaunched the superhero movie in a way. And I guess we can sort of get further into that, but maybe before we even talk about the significance of the X-Men franchise, the better question to open with is, guys, do you like X-Men movies?
Generally. Like, I wouldn't say that any of them, like, in particular, were overly bad. Like, there are a couple of them that are mediocre, but I'd say they have maybe, like, a 70% approval rate with me, where, like, some of them, like, between 60 or 70, where some of them I'm not too fond of, but some of them I really like, and I think that when they're good and they hit a home run, they're really good. So I'd say it has a better success ratio than failure, but I'd say, like, compared to, say, Marvel, it doesn't have as great a success rate.
Oh, man, already I just want to, like, jump into that stuff, because this is Marvel. This is Marvel 2. It's really interesting to sort of compare a studio to itself in a way. TK, do you like the X-Men movies?
I enjoy them actually mostly for putting Hugh Jackman on the map, to be frank. It's like, because he's like the fairly consistent character other than like Xavier and Magneto throughout the film franchise. So it's kind of fun to see his character grow and evolve, especially with Logan in the background there. But like, I'm with Robin. I tend to enjoy them, but I do find that a few of them do tend to slip a little towards the mediocre. But like, in terms of what you're saying, Gil, about it being the original quote unquote like Marvel franchise, like I can get behind that. Like it was what was the first X-Men movie? 2000?
2000, yeah.
So like that's 17 years of X-Men films. Like that's, when you really think about it, that's a staggering long time for a film franchise to keep going and still be successful, which I think is super cool.
Makes you feel old, doesn't it? It made me feel really old. But it's like, I remember watching X-Men in theaters when it came out. Oh my God, that was 17 years ago. I was in high school. What the hell?
Well, but like, it's a fun franchise, and they do some things well and some things maybe not as well as they could, but it's overall, it gets my vote.
I'm with you guys. I think actually maybe I give it a little give the X-Men movies a little less, like a lower hit to miss ratio than you guys. It's sort of like a 60% of, you know, 60% of the time they're good, because some of these movies are mediocre and some of them are downright terrible. I think we all know the one movie that is just like the worst bottom of the barrel X-Men movie so far.
Days of Future Past.
controversial opinion. It's definitely not Days of Future Past. But yeah, this is the thing. For context, you know, we look at where superhero movies were in 2000, and at that point, superhero movies had been popular, like DC ones, with Superman and Batman through, like, the late 70s, right through the 80s and into the 90s, because you have, like, Batman Forever. But then, it's sort of like, it's funny to think, it feels like there's a bigger break between Batman and Robin and the X-Men, but there really wasn't. It was like 3 years. It must have been 1997. It was like 3 years, but it really feels like if you look back on through the history of superhero movies, that was where this change happened, and, you know, DC had its time in the sun, and Marvel popped in with X-Men and Bryan Singer, and I don't know if it was ever the intent. I'm sure it was the intention to make a franchise out of the X-Men, but I don't know if it was ever the intention to make it such a continuity-centric franchise, because so many years later, you know, some of the movies are bad, some of them are much better than others, but there is this at least attempt at some form of consistency throughout all these movies. That, if we're talking superhero movies, the only other example that I can think of that's worth a damn so far is the Marvel Cinematic Universe, even though DC is now trying to imitate that same thing with their Justice League movies and Batman versus Superman. But, yeah, like, do you guys, what do you think of its significance? Do you think that, that X-Men holds some significance that maybe the MCU doesn't?
Well, yeah, I was exactly thinking about that, how this came only 3 years after Batman and Robin, which almost killed comic book and superhero movies off for good because it was so bad. Like, in between, you'd see, like, niche ones like Blade, but this was the attempt to, like, restart, like, a very popular one and try to make them, like, relevant and popular again. And I think they succeeded because, like, the first couple movies were huge hits, and it paved the way for the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe, and that's why we're here today. And even though the MCU kind of overtook the X-Men series in quality, it definitely should give it credit for making it possible, because when it came out, I think, like, interest in comic book movies was probably at its all-time low.
And they definitely play it, like, they don't adhere to the comics very much in those first few X-Men movies. There's a very clear attempt to distinguish these X-Men films from the comic source material by making the X-Men costumes like black leather and, you know, making it a lot more focused on mutants with abilities as opposed to superheroes. It's very interesting to consider how Bryan Singer and Fox were tasked with this, with relaunching the idea, you know, reselling the idea of the superhero comic book movie to the public after they had been burned on things like Batman and Robin or Spawn. That's another example of just a terrible movie with a comic book source material, and how the 90s kind of killed comic book movies for a bit. So let's just get into these movies, and we can talk about more specific things. And it's really cool when you look back at something like X-Men. You go like, okay, so, you know, let's talk about X-Men. And so many of the things in this movie have stayed the same. Like Patrick Stewart, like the cast has remained largely untouched except for a few bit parts. It's really neat that this continuity has happened. So X-Men, guys. When was the last time you saw it? What do you think of this movie? Is it any good looking back on it?
Well, when it originally came out, I was pretty lukewarm on it because this is one of those rare superhero movies where I just thought it was way too short. Like, it was only, I think, 100 minutes long, and it pretty much, like, defined origin story where you were introduced with, like, so many characters, but they just didn't go far enough with them. Like, it just felt like, oh my god, I want them to go so much more of this. It's pretty routine where they just kind of spend an hour or so introducing everybody and then throw in like a big climax and stuff, but it doesn't really, it kind of just whets your appetite. You don't really like get to, you really wanted more from it and stuff. And I rewatched it a couple years ago and it's okay. It really doesn't stand the test of time compared to other superhero movies that have come since then. But, I mean, it did a good enough job at introducing the characters, and you could say the casting was absolutely perfect because it brought us Hugh Jackman, Patrick Stewart, Ian McKellen, and they inhabited their role so well that they went on to play them for the next like 17 years. So it obviously did something right. So I don't think it works as well as a standalone movie, but as setting the stage, I think it does its job.
TK, when was the last time you watched X-Men?
It's been a long time since I've seen the original X-Men film. Cause I wasn't a huge X-Men comic guy. But I did enjoy the animated series, which I assume you guys will also watch. I'm sure you can hear the theme song zipping through your head. I was excited to see that being portrayed into a live version. I think that out of everyone there, Hugh Jackman, Patrick Stewart, and Ian McClellan did an excellent job, like, kind of capturing the characters. And they were the only ones that really stuck out for me. But I remember enjoying the film and getting a big kick out of it. But, like, looking back on it now, it's kind of interesting to see where it kind of ranks in the huge scheme of what they've created.
I've always, you know, just to launch off of your point, but not to get too far ahead, you said those are the only casting decisions that stuck out to you. I disagree. I think Alan Cumming as Nightcrawler is one of the best things about the X-Men series, and it's kind of criminal that he never came back to reprise the role. But talking about that first X-Men movie, like you guys, you know, I really liked it at the time it came out, but it doesn't really hold up. It's kind of like a safe, maybe a little bit quiet superhero origin story, they really aren't taking very many risks with this movie. Prior to it, I was a fan of the X-Men, not from the comics. I'd read some X-Men comics. I had watched the animated series, but more than anything, I actually collected X-Men trading cards, and I had a huge collection, so I was a fan of the characters way more than any of the stories. And on that level, I thought that the movie brought the characters to life in a really satisfactory way. But like I said, like, this is one of, it's not a bad X-Men movie, but it's one of the, like, least interesting X-Men movies, sadly, because it just, they don't really do anything. Maybe it doesn't hold up because we've seen superhero origin stories so many times since then, and we've also seen, like, Harry Potter, which is the same kind of, chosen one school-based narrative. But, yeah, it's not a bad movie, it's just a fine movie. That said, there is a connection to this very podcast with that first X-Men movie. It was shot here in Toronto, and my uncle is a set carpenter, and he built some of the stuff for X-Men. He built the door to the X-Men jet, the ramp that they all walk down, and he also helped build Magneto's crazy machine that's going to turn everybody into mutants. So there's a little connection, a little 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon from us to the X-Men films.
That's awesome. You could say your uncle is an X-Men.
He's an ex-X-Men carpenter.
There you go.
He's an ex-X-Men crewman. How's that? Yes. You know, we've actually, it's totally slipped my mind, but I should say there is one more piece of really notable casting with X-Men, and that's Anna Paquin as Rogue. You know, she had made a bit of a name for herself as like a child actor in The Piano, but I feel like Rogue is really a role that helped boost her career considerably, boost her profile, and of course she'd go on to be on like True Blood and stuff like that. X-Men was directed by Bryan Singer, and so was the sequel, X-Men 2, or X2 X-Men United. What do you guys think of this entry into the franchise?
I think it's actually one of the better ones because like you said, part one was the origin story and just kind of like set the table, and this one is when they finally went to do interesting things with their story and do interesting things with the character. You learn more about like Wolverine's backstory, and as a really effective villain, I think Brian Cox is ideally cast as Colonel Stryker. And correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't this the first appearance of Nightcrawler? Wasn't he not in the original X-Men?
Yes, that's what I was trying to say. Is I might have been getting ahead of myself, but TK had said like Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen were really the only sort of X-Men casting decisions that stood out to him. But to me, Alan Cumming as Nightcrawler in X-Men 2 is one of the best things about the franchise.
Yes, he's definitely the highlight of the, one of the highlights of the movie. I particularly love the opening scene where he runs through the Oval Office. It's pretty cool. And yeah, this is very satisfying. This is where I think the X-Men found its footing, and the actors were perfecting their characters, and it's just an overall very good superhero movie, and I think it still holds up fairly well today. I rewatched it a couple of years ago, and I think it holds up far better than most of the other early ones in the series.
I think, well, actually, before I give my thoughts, TK, X-Men 2, do you enjoy it?
Yeah, no, I did enjoy it. This is the one with Lady Deathstrike, right? And Angel?
Yes. Yeah. Or no, Lady Deathstrike, but Angel is in The Last Stand, Part 3.
Oh, no, he's in this one too, isn't he?
Angel? Somewhere? No, he's Ben Foster is in Part 3, and then the character also turns up in X-Men Apocalypse.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed this one. I thought it was a lot of fun using the mind-controlled Xavier to use Cerebro was cool. But yeah, I'm with you on that. Alan Cumming as Nightcrawler is a great casting choice. I have a hard time thinking of anyone that would have done it better, although I know that they replaced him in the films. But still, that's great.
Something that I really liked about X-Men 2 is that it felt like now that the characters were established, Bryan Singer and I guess Zach Penn, if I recall correctly, wrote the screenplay, but just the storytellers involved in the making of this movie could finally geek out a bit and show us things that, you know, it's the fanboy questions that you always want answered. Like, can Magneto pull the iron out of someone's blood? Well, we learn that if the iron in someone's blood is increased slightly, he can. So there's clearly some threshold there. And we get a cool sequence where he does it and then breaks out of prison. Just, you know, things like that. Can Magneto stop a plane from crashing? Can Storm summon multiple tornadoes? Just this is where we really get to see the X-Men team flex their muscles a bit and show off their powers, which I thought was pretty cool. I mentioned Halle Berry, Oscar winner Halle Berry. She was an established actress before the X-Men movies, but the role of Storm is one that she has reprised again and again. And I've always found, like, she never really knew what to do with Storm, because in the first X-Men movie, she's affecting Storm's, I believe, South African accent. I can't remember Storm's origin story. But by X-Men 2, she's just playing her like an American, and frankly, a lot more like just the Halle Berry public persona that we had become accustomed to at this point in time in the early 2000s. What do you guys think of Halle Berry as Storm?
Yeah, that actually struck me when I rewatched X-Men a couple of years ago, because I hadn't seen it so long. It's like, she's got an accent in this one? I don't remember her having an accent. So it was kind of funny how it just disappeared by the time the second film came around. But yeah, she's pretty forgettable overall. I've never thought she added her distinct touch to the role like the other actors did. It's kind of like anyone could have played Storm and it wouldn't have made that much difference. I've always found her to be one of the least interesting characters.
At this point, Bryan Singer stepped away from the X-Men franchise for quite a while to do Superman Returns and just some other stuff, and he wouldn't return again until X-Men Days of Future Past, which I believe was, 2014? So, what do you guys think of Bryan Singer as, the caretaker of the X-Men franchise? Because he's definitely directed the most films. He's directed 4 of the movies, and he has a very distinct sort of feel, sort of atmosphere that he gives the X-Men. A lot of stainless steel textures and light blue lights, things like that. What do you think of Bryan Singer and what he brings to the X-Men franchise?
I think he does a solid job. I still remember when he was announced as the director of the first movie, which seemed unusual because he had, the usual suspects and apt pupil on his resume. And back then, it just seemed weird to be doing this guy who did all these respected movies and then giving him a superhero movie. But that sort of thing happens all the time now. But I find that his movies, a lot of the time, are generally, the strongest entries in the series, because I guess he just knows the tone and how they should look and handle the actors. And I think that's why, his movies generally seem to, function the best out of all the X-Men movies.
TK, would you agree or disagree? Do you like what Bryan Singer brings to the X-Men series?
Yeah, I do initially. I think that after, Days of Future Past is one of my favorite X-Men films, but, And I know getting a franchise off its feet is a little difficult, but X2 and Days of Future Past are some of the better X-Men films, so it's hard to kind of point fault at his involvement in the film franchise, because he's the one who pushed the first two up and out, right? So hard to take away from that.
I kind of feel like he's 50-50 in terms of his quality, too, because while I really like X2 and I quite enjoyed Days of Future Past, as I said, X-Men 1 is just kind of a safe, very generic film, and as I'll talk about later, X-Men Apocalypse to me just felt really lazy and like he'd run out of ideas for stories to tell, because it felt like it took elements from all the previous X-Men movies as opposed to doing anything new with it. So I agree that Bryan Singer did a great job of launching the franchise, and he gave us Days of Future Past, but I don't know. Were the X-Men movies to continue, I don't know if they're going to without Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart, but if they do continue, I hope that they allow other filmmakers to, lend their own voices to it, because stuff like X-Men First Class, which was directed by Matthew Vaughn, that's a great movie, and it definitely has a different feel than the Bryan Singer blue lights and stainless steel look. So next in our lineup is X-Men 3, The Last Stand, directed by Brett Ratner. What a terrible decision. Well, Bryan Singer went off to do Superman Returns, which sadly was not a great decision either. And this one is pretty reviled, I found, but any time I've watched it, I haven't disliked it. I don't know. What do you guys think of X-Men The Last Stand?
It gets a bad rap, but I've never thought it was that bad. My complaint about it is actually the same as the first X-Men movie in that it's too short. It's like 104 minutes, but it has so many new characters and like so many different subplots, and it tries to condense them all into this short movie, which is supposed to be like the big climax of the series, and I think it just has too much on its plate and could have stood to be another like 30, 40 minutes longer and gone in depth with a lot of these characters some more, I thought. I don't know if there was like a lot of post-production stuff or something got cut. And of course you have like a lot of the characters being killed off abruptly, like Cyclops and Xavier. And it just felt like kind of rushed, but it's an enjoyable movie overall when it does work. I really like the climax, the whole big battle between the two mutant sides on Alcatraz, which I think is pretty effective. And the whole sequence where Magneto moves the Golden Gate Bridge to make like a path to Alcatraz.
I thought, but that's the worst pun he gives out. Charles always wanted to build bridges. Oh my god, that's just so bad.
I thought you would embrace that. It's like the dumb joke of the week at X-Men. But it's a pretty cool sequence overall in spite of that. So yeah, it's I don't think it's far from the worst superhero movie ever made, but it should have been a hell of a lot better overall.
TK, do you like X-Men The Last Stand?
Like, it's not an... Like, I'm kind of with you guys. Watching it, I say one thing, but retrospect in terms of where it fits in the franchise series, I don't know how it doesn't really add up very well. I actually think I'm not a huge fan of the Phoenix storyline. I remember when they gave that after credits teaser of the Phoenix at the end of X2, I was actually super pissed because I'm like, please don't do the Phoenix storyline. I just find it really, I just find it very dull because I find Jean Grey's character really dull.
And that's like the only story that you can tell with her character, apparently.
That's the issue. Is that, like, you have two very powerful telepaths in the X-Men universe. You have Professor X and you have Jean Grey. I'm like, why? I just don't get it. I'm like, there's so many more interesting things to do with Charles, as shown in X-Men First Class and X-Men Days of Future Past. Like, there's much more interesting things to do with Charles Xavier. And Jean Grey, I find, just not that interesting. So, like, I remember not being very excited about this film and having a hard time getting into it. But, like, there are some sequences which are kind of fun. Like, I do enjoy the Golden Gate Bridge sequence. And I'm just a fan of watching... I'm a fan of watching Ian McKellen play Magneto, and like we get a lot of him in this film, and that was fun. I am with you on this, Robin. It is a very short film, and I do enjoy Kelsey Grammer's Beast. Not gonna lie.
I mean, he looks a little silly though. He's perfect casting, but he looks just a little silly in some of that makeup. Yeah, I think The Last Stand does just get a bad rap, but it's not a terrible movie. Why do you guys think it's hated on, though? It, like, this is definitely one of the most hated on X-Men movies in the series. Why does it get such a bad rap compared to all the others?
I think because at the time it came out, it was going to be like the big ending of a trilogy, and I think people were just expecting a lot more. But I mean, they still kept making X-Men movies, so I guess you can't look back and pretty much say that, like, it was a disappointing climax. Though it is funny that a lot of the events that happen in this film just get totally erased and rewritten in X-Men Days of Future Past, so it's almost like there was an overall apology, like, sorry we made this film, so forget it even existed. So I think that's probably not helped its reputation, that essentially that all the events in this film are meaningless now.
Yeah, remember how Professor X died in this movie? Me neither. But yeah, he did. Man, so, you know, maybe, like you said, it was the worst X-Men movie at the time, but boy, did it get topped right after with X-Men Origins Wolverine. That title alone tells you how, Like, this is a ghost. This is a relic of a spin-off franchise that did not really take off. X-Men Origins. I remember they were also developing an X-Men Origins Magneto movie, but Wolverine did so badly and was so hated that they scrapped it altogether. There will be no more X-Men Origins movies.
To be fair, an X-Men Origins Magneto movie would have been amazing. I really, really think that.
But do you think that based off of X-Men Origins Wolverine?
I sure don't.
Well, what do you guys think of this movie?
I don't think it's awful. I just kind of think it's more generic and forgettable overall. I know that some of the reasons people were pissed at this movie were reasons that didn't mean a lot to me. I know people were just so pissed at the portrayal of Deadpool in it and thought he was just wasted and that they completely missed the point of his character, but I had no pre-knowledge of Deadpool at this point, so it didn't really bother me at all. There were some good things in it. I really liked the casting of Liev Schreiber as Creed. Sabretooth, I thought he did a very good job and was a good nemesis for Wolverine in this one. So I don't think it's a terrible movie overall, but it does have some really stupid plotting, like the adamantium bullets or whatnot, which erases memory, which everyone complained about when it came out, just because it was so lazy, such lazy writing to like plug a lot of the holes in the plot. But I can see why they didn't do any more X-Men Origins after this. But I really don't think this movie is as awful as everyone says it is. But I've never felt compelled to revisit it, though, since I originally saw it, so it's not exactly good.
So you're not going to go to bat for this movie?
No, definitely not.
TK, X-Men Origins : Wolverine.
Really, it kind of deserves itself just based on the thing of Deadpool alone. Oh, God. I feel so bad. It's so bad, guys. It's so bad.
Yeah, this movie gave us Deadpool.
Yeah, well, no, it didn't. You take
but
that
it did.
Back.
It gave us Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool. Were it not for X-Men Origins Wolverine, I somehow doubt there would be a Deadpool movie. Dead silence is all that's met with. Sorry, TK, X-Men Origins Wolverine.
It's this is definitely very low. Hang on, where's my list? I know we're going to get into this later, but like, I think that is like the last in my ranking of the films, because it's just bad. Like, I like Liev Schreiber, but I think that, actually, I think Cracked recently did an article on really awesome films hidden in terrible films, and they looked at the intro sequence to this film where it shows, like, Victor Creed and Logan, like, fighting in, like, all these different world wars, and like, that would have been an amazing movie. I'm like, that would have been an amazing movie, but that's not the film we got. Instead, we got mute Ryan Reynolds and not great plot. Like, it's not a terrible, terrible X-Men film, but like, it's definitely the bottom of the barrel for a superhero film.
Yeah, this is definitely my least favorite X-Men movie, and I mean, what to say? It's another one of those cases where it's like, I can't think of anything to really defend it. It's very poorly assembled, and they really have no excuse. They had a great cast, and X-Men, there's so much that they can draw upon. Like, there are just decades of source material and stories and characters that they can draw upon to tell whatever story they like. But for some reason, they decide to do things like, why even make it Deadpool if you're going to make the character completely unlike Deadpool? I'm not about to defend Deadpool as a character, because if you listen to this podcast, you know that I hated the movie Deadpool. But why even bother making it that character if you are just going to not make it that character? He's the character in name alone, really. There's so many perplexing decisions. Adamantium bullet that just erases the significance of the entire movie. Because if Wolverine can't remember his past, then why should we care? Right? I agree, TK. I would have loved to have seen a movie where Wolverine is fighting in all the different wars from, you know, World War I all the way up to Vietnam, and he's in Saudi Arabia, etc., etc., etc. Like, that would be pretty interesting to see a man who, for whom time has no meaning, and so what does he do? He just rages against the world in every combat he can get himself into. That's a cool movie idea. It's just not in X-Men Origins Wolverine. To me, the most significant thing about X-Men Origins Wolverine is that this was that movie that got leaked early before the special effects were done. Do you guys remember that?
Yes, yes, I remember people were, it was pretty monumental. People were saying, oh my god, this movie is going to flop. Everyone's going to watch it online. Nobody's going to go to see it and stuff. But I think the quality of the film itself did more damage to it than the actual leaking.
Did you guys watch the leaked version?
No, I didn't bother.
I totally did. And it's really funny, all the unfinished CGI effects. Oh, you know what? Okay, here you go. Guys, you've been defending this, but Gambit. Remember how Gambit is in X-Men Origins Wolverine?
Isn't it Taylor Kitsch?
Taylor Kitsch, but boy, and he like flies around like a helicopter with his cane. That is really terrible. Yeah, this isn't a good movie. And for a while there, this is another one where it sort of felt like there was a lull. Like, X-Men Origins Wolverine, especially following The Last Stand, which people already didn't like, it seemed like X-Men was kind of, you know, dead in the water for a little while there. And so they decided to do... They pulled a Star Trek, a J.J. Abrams Star Trek, in that they rebooted the franchise, but in a way that they could tie into the original series if they so desired. And we got X-Men First Class, directed by Matthew Vaughn. What do you guys think of this one?
I think this is really solid. It's one of the better superhero prequels ever made, and did a very good job at rebooting the series. And I think what it did so well is the casting. Like, James McAvoy, Michael Fassbender were just perfect as Xavier and Magneto as their younger selves. And even looking back, seeing Jennifer Lawrence as Mystique, like, this is after I think she did Winter's Bone and got an Oscar nomination, but she wasn't really, like, a big star yet. But this was kind of her big first Hollywood project, so they kind of like discovered her and kind of made her one of like the biggest stars in the world. And I kind of like the period detail that they mixed this in with the Cuban Missile Crisis and kind of imply that the X-Men were front and center and nearly caused like a very historical event that nearly ended the world. I think that was so neat how they like mixed in the climax with the whole engagement between like the American ships and the Russian ships and stuff, and really added like a lot of depth to the characters who had been introduced before. And I thought it was quite an achievement because everyone loved Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart in these roles, but they actually found two younger actors who could live up to them. So yeah, they really did this one well and did a good job at restoring credibility to the franchise.
TK, what are your thoughts on X-Men First Class?
I'm a huge fan of X-Men First Class. I think it's one of the...
Well, I'm shocked. I can't believe
you're
it.
Not, because it has Michael Fassbender, the name who rolls off your tongue and into your heart. I'm amazed how you think that it would be anything but. I just really like this film. Again, tagging on to the things Robin said, I think they did such a stellar job with the casting and really making us feel that these characters were connected to the ones that we've seen before and just giving us that little bit of deeper look into who they are. Actually, I really like I think it's the first shot where it's Eric Lenscher as Magneto, right? Where he's in the concentration camp. That's powerful stuff. And I'm a big fan of it. I think it's really cool. And you know what? I really like Kevin Bacon in this, actually. I think he's great. And they do a really good job showing on where Eric Lenscher and Charles Xavier differ in their points of view. And there's a whole bunch of comparisons with the X-Men franchise where they show Charles Xavier is a parallel to like Martin Luther King in terms of like peaceful cohabitation, and Magneto is more like a Malcolm X where it's like violence. And I really kind of, I like that dichotomy between the two characters, and like having this at the center of the film is really cool. It's really well done. Although January Jones is Emma Frost, bit of a give and take there.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. I mean, credit where credit's due. The X-Men franchise has always just had a good sense of casting, be it Hugh Jackman or Patrick Stewart or Ian McKellen or Hugh Jackman, because he just plays himself again, and James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender. Casting is great, but my problem with X-Men First Class is that it's, while like the main stuff is really good, I felt all the like B plots and side plots to be kind of lackluster. I didn't like January Jones as Emma Frost. I didn't like, you know, there are like all those side characters like Banshee and Havoc, and that there's that girl played by Zoe Kravitz who can like, she's got like dragonfly wings and spits acid, I guess. So many of those. Oh, and the bad guys have that one dude who doesn't say a single thing and he just shoots tornadoes at people. A lot of the little side things I found pretty weak. But overall, this is a good revitalization of the franchise. And yeah, it brought in a lot of great new members to the cast as well. The likes of Jennifer Lawrence before she really took off. And this is one of the films that helped do it. So for me, it's a good relaunch. And it's one that I really enjoy. But I do find it weak in a lot of areas as well. But maybe that's just a symptom when they go back to the beginning with X-Men movies. Like we said, you know, that first X-Men, it's kind of weak. It's not the best, but still enjoyable for a lot of reasons and with a good cast. And so they wanted to do another Wolverine movie, even though X-Men Origins Wolverine did not do very well and was not received very well. So James Mangold, who also directed Logan, he did The Wolverine. And this is, you know, the solo movie, Wolverine Goes to Japan. It's based on, I believe, a Frank Miller run of Wolverine, where Wolverine goes to Japan. What did you guys think of this one?
I remember when it came out, and I really didn't have any strong opinion on it. I just thought it was so forgettable. Like, it's Wolverine Goes to Japan. There really isn't anything else to it, and doesn't really feature anything memorable at all. I rewatched it a couple years ago, and I liked it a bit better. I kind of liked the Japan setting, just because it's kind of different from your average superhero flick, but it really doesn't have a very interesting plot at all. I actually wrote a Cracked article a few years ago where I pretty much picked apart the villain's plan in this, like this old guy named Yoshida who wants to steal like Wolverine's immortality, and he invites him to his home and he drugs Wolverine and he leaves him in his bed, and then instead of like just dragging him to the lab and extracting like his powers that way, he constructs this elaborate plan where he fakes his own death and makes Wolverine protect his daughter and then lures him into a trap. And the whole movie you're watching, it's like, this should have been 30 minutes old. He could have just killed him while he was in bed and drained his powers then. So it's kind of like the whole plot itself is just kind of idiotic and builds up to that stupid climax where he fights Yoshida in a robot suit. It's pretty dumb, but not terrible, but just kind of generic overall.
TK, do you like The Wolverine?
It's okay. It's better than Origins. I think it's better than Origins anyway, because there's all this, there's a lot of tie-ins with Wolverine's character with a lot of stuff in the East, so it's kind of neat to see him go back. But at the same time, like, the story is not great. The villain is mediocre at best, and although I will admit, I kind of enjoy, there's a scene where Wolverine's attacking a village and gets, like, peppered with arrows, and I think that's kind of cool. But seeing him face out against a giant metal thing is something we've seen before, and it just didn't do that much for me.
I rewatched Wolverine after watching Logan, because I got home from seeing Logan, I was like, that was great. I want to watch some more Wolverine stuff. And The Wolverine was on Netflix, so I rewatched it for the first time since I'd seen it originally. And yeah, it's not a great movie, and the villain's plan really doesn't make any sense, but Hugh Jackman's performance, especially looking back after Logan on The Wolverine, he's great. He's really good in this role. I mean, we know by now that he's awesome as Wolverine, but it's just interesting to put this Wolverine solo story in new context after watching Logan. And yeah, it's, you know what, I found there to be a couple of memorable things about it. Wolverine getting stuck full of arrows is a pretty memorable thing. The bullet train sequence that looked really cheesy in the trailers for the movie, it looked like the worst thing, is actually really fun and thrilling, and there are some clever moments, like how Wolverine and the guy he's fighting have to keep dodging these signs that are passing overhead. and you know, they'll either flatten themselves against the roof of the train, or they'll hop to jump over a sign. Wolverine uses this against his attacker by faking him out and making him jump into a sign, and it's smart and it's funny. It's one of those, it's sort of like an Indiana Jones chase maneuver that's just like a really clever gag. So I did find there are a few sequences in the movie that are really cool. Wolverine, he gets sliced through the middle like you'd see in an anime, and, you know, the guy falls in two halves, but his healing factor heals him up before he falls apart. A lot of little clever things like that. So I do think the Wolverine has improved when you watch it after seeing Logan, even if it's not an amazing movie on its own. Here's a question for you guys, though. If the Wolverine had come out instead of X-Men Origins Wolverine, do you think you'd like it more? Would you want more Wolverine movies? Like, would that have made a difference?
I don't know. I don't know if it's a strong enough standalone film on its own that it would have, like, really changed much over my thoughts about X-Men Origins Wolverine. So, yeah, I think they just... I think if they had made, like, a Wolverine Origins movie that was kind of similar in tone to Logan, it would have worked really well because that was just so jarringly different. But I don't think this movie is strong enough overall to have helped the whole spinoffs.
TK, what do you think?
Sorry, if I'd... If this had come out before...
If this had come out, if the Wolverine had come out in place of X-Men Origins Wolverine.
I think I would have bought it a little more, to be honest, I think. I'm sure I would have pulled the villain story apart, but I think I don't know. X-Men Origins is just so not great. It might be a blessing to have it taken out of the franchise, but no, yeah, like I said, I enjoyed the Wolverine. Like, I can see its flaws, but I kind of enjoyed watching it.
I personally think it would have made quite a difference if instead of X-Men Origins Wolverine, we had gotten The Wolverine. For one thing, we wouldn't get that sort of just like overproduced idea of doing this X-Men spin-off franchise that's so, you know, it's X-Men Origins, like heavily branded titling and all that. But on top of that, I just think that, like, I think The Wolverine is a better movie than X-Men The Last Stand. And so I do think it would have made a difference. I wonder, you know, just hypothesizing if that had happened, if this had come out instead, if we would have gotten First Class, if they would have attempted a reboot like that, or if maybe they would have just sort of plowed ahead using that same cast and not going back in time. Hey, speaking of going back in time, X-Men Days of Future Past, this is the one where the two different casts of the X-Men branches of the franchise are all put into the same movie together as we get these characters in the far future and in the 1970s. What do you guys think? And of course, we also get Bryan Singer coming back to the franchise. What do you think of Days of Future Past?
It's definitely one of my favorite ones. Like, in spite of the whole... like thing that it was kind of like rewriting the whole timeline and just trying to pretend that stuff like The Last Stand didn't exist and kind of like create a lot of errors in the continuity. It was so well done. And just as effectively as how like the X-Men First Class like did a good job at like interacting the mutants with historical events during the Cuban Missile Crisis of the 60s. I really like the idea that they inserted this into like the whole like 1970s and made like Nixon a major character in the story, and I liked the whole idea of like Peter Dinklage as Trask, like trying to convince Nixon to like invest in like all these like robots and stuff, and try to and Sentinels, and try to get rid of all the mutants, and it did a really effective job at like combining like the two generations into like a really clever story, and worked really well. Like, if you don't think about the plot too much, it's a very entertaining movie, but it has some great standalone sequences, like the whole like climax on the White House lawn, and of course finally bringing what's his name into it, Quicksilver. That the whole very memorable sequence where it's so awesome, just the whole like slow motion sequence that you're able to forget that if they had just kept Quicksilver in the whole plot, they could have solved like most of their problems like so easily. But it does a good job at integrating all the characters together, and I'd say maybe is the strongest X-Men movie overall.
TK, would you agree?
It's not my strongest, but it's definitely up there. This gave us our Quicksilver scene. This gave us the really awesome scene of Magneto like rising up the Robert F. Kennedy Center and closing it around to create a barricade. Like, there's so much cool stuff that happens in this film. It's a really good way of meshing the First Class with the X-Men we've become used to since 2000. It says, I think this is really, really, really well done. I think storylines all work well together. I think the casting is on par. Like, it's just, this is a great X-Men film.
Yeah, I really enjoy Days of Future Past, but I do feel like it suffers from the same thing that superhero comics suffer from, which is eventually everything gets just way too convoluted. Like you said, Robin, you know, it's great if you don't really think about it. Because, yeah, does the timeline make sense? Does this continuity make sense? Like, what is going on? And the plot itself is just, like, layers upon layers deep of convoluted exposition, you know? They want to steal Mystique's DNA to make Sentinel robots that can adapt to fight any mutant, while Wolverine is sent back in time by Kitty Pryde to talk to the young versions of Professor X and Magneto to convince them to help. Blah, 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 blah. Like, it's just, it really is just like this mind-bendy plot that probably doesn't really hold together. It doesn't hold up to scrutiny. But because that's sort of the case with any superhero story over any given length of time, and because the stuff that X-Men Days of Future Past delivers is just so cool, like the Quicksilver scene, like Magneto lifting that stadium, and you know, just all those great things, it really is easy to overlook the flaws. So I definitely enjoy Days of Future Past quite a bit, but I don't think it's a perfect movie, and I think that I don't think it really makes sense either in a lot of ways. But it's just, it's so darn fun, it's easy to look past that stuff. I'm trying to think about other things to talk about on Days of Future Past. Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Can we talk about Quicksilver for half a second?
Yeah, like, I wanted to touch upon that.
He's we're going to get into this later, but like between the two Quicksilver scenes, between Apocalypse and this one like is I really like this one because it's self-contained. It gives us a really unique view. Like, while they expanded it in Apocalypse, I really like this one. I think it's really neat. But they essentially establish him as, like, the most powerful mutant that's ever lived, and the fact that he can do literally anything. And then they just, like, sideline him for the rest of the film. And they did the same thing on Apocalypse, where he gets injured fairly early on, so he can't use his power to the full extent.
But see,
it's a cop-out there.
See, I don't like Apocalypse. I don't think it's a very good movie. But at least to me, they gave an excuse as to why Quicksilver was not just with them at all times using his power. Like, at least they knocked him out. Because in Days of Future Past, there is no reason given. Like, he's watching the events unfold on TV, and we know that he could get there in, like, a split second. He's so fast, he could just get there immediately. What is stopping him? There's just nothing. And in a way, that to me is more infuriating than just doing some cop-out thing where, like, oh, he got knocked out by an energy blast. There we go. Problem solved, you know? I'd rather have a bad reason for him not doing it than no reason at all. What I wanted to say was that I listened to a podcast called Gen Pop, which is David Chen from the Slash Filmcast, and he has a discussion every week with Joanna Robinson, who writes for Vanity Fair, and she's a prominent film journalist, written for a number of websites and things like that. And they talked about the X-Men franchise, and Joanna Robinson said, the smart thing to do after Days of Future Past would have been to do a solo Quicksilver movie, since he was the fan favorite from that series, and do that instead of X-Men Apocalypse. What do you guys think of the idea of, like, Quicksilver having his own series of movies?
It would be cool, but that's kind of the problem, is that it would kind of get repetitive, I think, which would be a problem, is just because he has such amazing powers, it's kind of like you would get, like, a nonstop series of sequence where he, like, freezes time and stuff, and I think it would be tough to, like, stretch it out, unless you kind of did a backstory where they kind of show him he was a normal guy before he got these powers, but we just haven't learned so much about his character as well that I don't know if he could sustain an entire movie by himself.
And there's this weird thing about how he's Magneto's son, which is a holdover from the comics, but at the same time feels really tacked on to the movie. Like, it feels like it's there out of obligation to the canon, but it's never really, like, you never really find out how that works. When Magneto, like, had a kid? Huh? You find out a different kid that he had in X-Men Apocalypse, but I don't know about this Quicksilver guy. TK, would you have watched a Quicksilver solo movie?
I don't know. It depends how they handled it. If, I don't know. That would depend on a lot of things, I think. Like, I like the Quicksilver from the two prequel films, but, like, be interested if they could do a lot more with him instead of just making it, like, a whole bunch of, like, quick shots, you know?
Well, guys, you both seem skeptical as to whether a Quicksilver solo movie will be any good, but guess what? We're going to get a movie of The Flash, and that's essentially the same thing, so I guess we will get a chance to see if a movie about a dude who can go faster than everybody else will actually be able to sustain itself and give us an interesting plot instead of him seeming just so overpowered, as is the case with Quicksilver in the X-Men movies.
Well, I wondered if we were going to get a Flash movie. I want to see if Superman can outrun the Flash.
maybe we'll find out in the Justice League.
Yeah.
or if we see that movie. Man, I'm not looking forward to that, I'm afraid.
No.
And this is bringing us, we're getting closer and closer. Like, man, there's so many X-Men movies. This franchise really has been, not only has it been going on for like almost 17 years, but it averages like a movie every couple of years. There's so many of these. X-Men Apocalypse, it just came out last year, and this is another sort of, like, I want to say Avengers-style movie. It's not quite Avengers style, but I guess it is, because it's like, it's this huge superhero team, and they are bringing in all these characters that we know and love, like Jean Grey, and Nightcrawler's back, and Cyclops. We're gonna get some of his origin story, so it really is like almost like the Avengers bringing back all those characters from all these previous movies to do a team up once again, but in a new way. And they're all ganging up to fight Apocalypse, as played by Oscar Isaac. You'd think that this would be a really winning formula, but as I've said already, I didn't like this movie. What did you guys think of X-Men Apocalypse?
I wasn't keen on it either. Like, pretty much everyone has said that this felt like a greatest hits movie, where they took scenes that were popular in like the in all the other films and kind of meshed them together in one, but didn't really add anything new. I thought the opening part, trying to show Magneto being like living as a normal person again with like a wife and daughter, was kind of interesting, but other than that, it was nothing else I'd ever seen before. And by the time it got to the climax, where it was just another big battle, a big special effects extravaganza, I got really, really bored. And I gotta say, like, the casting of Oscar Isaac, while I was watching the movie, like, the Apocalypse was such an uninteresting character that I completely had forgotten that Oscar Isaac was playing him, because he was buried under mounds of makeup and they really didn't give him anything interesting to do. So it's like, take one of our greatest working actors and make him a boring villain. That's pretty much like one of its biggest crimes. But yeah, it's easily the most forgettable, I think, out of all the X-Men movies.
TK, what did you think of X-Men Apocalypse?
I felt like it was a paint-by-numbers X-Men film. Like, it was just, like, all the tropes they need to slam into an X-Men film to make it, like, vaguely entertaining. I was very bored by this film, which is too bad considering the two films that came before it did such a good job on setting us up and, like, making us really care about the characters. And then, I don't know, it just didn't really work for me. And like you guys, I felt pretty bad about Oscar Isaacs being in this film and then getting kind of, I don't want to say shafted, it's not the right term, but just like, he just didn't...
Underused.
Yeah, exactly. And like, when you get an actor like him, like, you should pump that up, and there was just no use for that, which is too bad. But like, I'm a big fan of Michael Fassbender playing Magneto, so like, I will take every opportunity I can to watch him do that. So that was my big draw for it. Like, and I like the attention he got in this, like the subplots and everything, I thought was a lot of fun. But just like, I don't know, this movie did not do it for me at all.
Yeah, Robin, you referred to X-Men Apocalypse as a greatest hits of X-Men. I feel like it's like the greatest hits of the X-Men franchise, but like done by a cover band. Like, done just not as well as it had been done previously. Like, we get Nightcrawler, But and I like the idea behind the use of Nightcrawler, where he's young and he just likes, he likes like Michael Jackson. He wears a Michael Jackson jacket because it's the 80s. Like, I like that idea of styling Nightcrawler like that, but you know, it's just not as good. He's not Alan Cumming. There's no sequence that's nearly as impressive or interesting as that White House sequence from the beginning of X-Men 2. So underused. It's really telling. Caitlin noticed that X-Men Apocalypse came on Netflix recently, and she asked me, should I watch X-Men Apocalypse? And I said, just name a thing that happens in any X-Men movie. Like, you can get as specific or generic as you want. And she was like, Magneto goes bad, and Professor X tries to convince him to stop. I was like, yes, that's in the movie. And she's like, they go to like a family home and explain what mutants are to the parents and like accept a kid to school. Yes, they do that in the movie too. Okay, Jean Grey has like a vaguely romantic moment with Wolverine where she touches his. Yes, they do that as well. Like, it really just is everything. It's paint by numbers. It's the greatest hits, but with a cover band. It brings absolutely nothing new to the table. And it's boring. It just came off as really dull. It's a lot of sound and fury signifying nothing. Something
although
I found.
Sorry to jump in. I do love the Wolverine cameo. That's fantastic.
You know, it's okay until he runs away and the camera stays on him for way too long, and it gets kind of awkward as you watch topless Hugh Jackman with a huge mullet running through the snow.
You
just
know what?
Saying.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that at all.
Another thing, like a real knock against the movie, is that for all that they bury Oscar Isaac under a whole lot of makeup to the point where he looks like a big grapefruit roll-up, I guess both Jennifer Lawrence and Nicholas Holt at this point had gotten big enough that they could demand not to be in their characters' makeup all the time. So they both occasionally change into Mystique and Beast, but the majority of the movie is just them looking like Jennifer Lawrence and Nick Holt. And, like, what the hell, guys? Like, your characters, you know, especially Mystique. Mystique is supposed to be this whole, like, I am mutant and proud, I'm not afraid of who I am character. She, even in X-Men Apocalypse, she's hailed as this, like, freedom fighter for mutants, proud of who she is, and, like, an icon among her people, which I also found to be irritatingly close to Katniss Everdeen from The Hunger Games, also played by Jennifer Lawrence. But in spite of all that, Mystique just doesn't look like the character we know by this point. And the idea of Beast being able to transform at will is also kind of irritating to me, because, you know, isn't the point that he's a genius, but he looks like a monster? It felt really lazy, guys. I was let down. You let me down, X-Men Apocalypse. Let's touch upon Deadpool, because it's like technically an X-Men movie. The character was established in X-Men Origins Wolverine, played by the same actor, and then in Deadpool we get Colossus, who has been in other X-Men movies, as well as a new X-Men character, Negasonic Teenage Warhead. The X-Mansion, like Xavier's School for the Gifted, is featured. So it's all technically an X-Men movie. But do you guys think this fits with the X-Men franchise? Did you like Deadpool? Care to give your thoughts?
Well, I know you're not a fan of it, but I remember liking it when it originally came out, just because it was so different than what I'd normally seen, and I was kind of getting burnt out on superhero movies. But I haven't actually gone back and rewatched it since it came out, so I'm curious to see if it's going to hold up. But I definitely did enjoy it. It did have its own like quirky sense of humor and stuff. But it'll be interesting to watch after seeing Logan to see how well this one holds up.
TK, Deadpool, what do you think of the movie, and do you think it fits with the rest of the movie series?
I enjoy Deadpool, and I think it kind of vaguely fits in with the rest of the franchise. Like, I know we have the X-Men connection with Colossus and Negasonic Teenage Warhead, but it's, I don't know if it feels like this weirdly separate thing that exists only to poke fun at its X-Men's origins character. Although I will admit, I love Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool. Like, I love him so much. There was a recent teaser that went out with Logan that featured, like, this little featurette for the next Deadpool movie. And, you know, I loved every second of it. I thought it was fantastic. And I know a lot of people kind of like debate the merit of Deadpool, like, okay, well, the fourth wall is something we've seen broken before, and I'm not quite sure whether that holds up, but just, I think he has so much fun, it's infectious. And like, you can see him really enjoying the character, and I think that kind of leaks out into the audience whenever we watch. Like, I had a lot of fun watching Deadpool, but like, coming away from it, it's not that critically great of a film, but at the same time, it's just, it's so much fun, I think that that's worth it.
So, I hate Deadpool. I really do. And most of that hatred, though, is in one part, it's because I just find the character so obnoxious, and I don't find him funny. I don't find Deadpool's humor to be especially witty in any way. For the most part, I find it sort of like Seltzer Friedberg humor, where it's just references. He's mistaking references for jokes. You know, where if Deadpool's like, you know, I gotta kill you quick so I can get home and watch the Golden Girls. I guess that's a joke, but it's like, haha, remember the Golden Girls? I don't know. It's to me, it's not very clever. I know a lot of people really like it, and I certainly don't begrudge them that. But I also think Deadpool is highly overrated. I think that a lot of people really sell it greater than it deserves. I'm genuinely puzzled by the love that this movie gets, because yeah, you know, it's a bit different than most superhero movies, but at the same time, it's really the same as a lot of superhero movies too. Like, it just does a lot of the same tropes, and the villains I found completely uninteresting. It sucks that Morena Baccarin is reduced to a damsel in distress at the very end. There are a few moments that stood out as good, but overall, I was unimpressed by the movie and annoyed by the character. And then that combined with so many people just loving it beyond all belief, and it, like, that just increased my hatred. It's like my hatred was made proportionate to the amount of love it was getting, because I felt like people were just they were blinded. Arr, get off my lawn. But, yeah, so I'm not a fan of Deadpool. It's not terrible, but I do not like it. And I don't think it fits at all with the rest of the X-Men universe. It's going to be weird watching them tie it in further, because the sequel is going to have Cable, a popular X-Men character, and Cyclops' son from the future, if you can believe that. He's going to be one of the main characters. So they're really marrying it to the X-Men franchise, even though I just don't feel like it fits whatsoever. And that brings us all the way up to the present with Logan. Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart are the only returning X-Men cast members in this one, and they both say it's their retirement of these characters. They're not going to be returning to these roles again. I think they've said this before, but it seems like there is a real note of finality to this. And I'll say now, we're going to spoil Logan, because we have to sort of talk about it all the way up into the end. What did you guys think of this movie?
Just a phenomenal movie overall. Like, when we talked about it on a last podcast, I said it's not just a great X-Men movie, not just a great superhero movie, but it's just a great movie overall, and just one of the freshest takes I've seen on the genre. And I think it really did a great service to the character that it decided to go very dark and be like a hardcore R-rated movie, because it just showed, like, because throughout the entire series, you can tell that Wolverine is just such a miserable, unhappy character who feels so cursed about his existence. And it's great to see him, like, turned up to 11 in this role here, just seeing him, like, comes in front of kids and just being, like, angry as possible, and then just, like, being so, like, ravenously violent and stuff. Like, there are just so many phenomenal scenes in this, like, action scenes where he's, like, slicing off people's heads and stuff with his claws, and just the poignancy, his relationship with Professor X, just who looks just so sad that he's, like, nearing close to death, and that he has to sit in, like, this miserable warehouse in, like, Texas in order to avoid in order to avoid hurting people and stuff, just seeing the tragedy of the character and where they stay with this family in a farmhouse, and Xavier says, this is the greatest night of my life, getting to live like a normal person again. It's just so sad and just adds so much poignancy to its character. But there are just so many great standout sequences, like with the one inside the casino where he loses control of his telepathy powers, and Logan kind of has to move in slow motion to stop it and stuff as everything else is frozen in time. And the whole, like, the big battle on, like, the farm and stuff between the family where they, like, pretty much kill off, like, an entire family, which is just so dark and stuff. And it also leads up to, like, a really effective climax where, like, Logan has to fight himself and whatnot, and leads to a really effective ending as well. And also, I know, McGill, you must like this, but seeing Richard E. Grant as the villain, like,
yeah,
I haven't...
Man.
I mean, I haven't seen him in a movie in a long, long time, and I know he's one of your favorites, so it was pretty cool to see him come back as, like, an evil mad doctor. It was pretty cool, but, yeah, just a great movie overall, and it, then my only complaint about this is that all the other superhero movies that come out in 2017 are just going to have a lot to measure up to, because I don't think they can top this one, just because it was such a fresh take on the genre overall.
TK, did you like Logan?
Yeah, I loved Logan a lot more than I thought I was going to be. Actually, I was a wreck actually through most of this film. I was actually amazed at how kind of emotionally devastating it was to be. I know we're going to spoil Logan, but the part that got me the most is when we first see Charles, when we get into this big, like, water silo that's fallen over, and, like, it's kind of dark and a little dingy, and there's no and, like, there's, like, the little bed, and you see some books, and that, like, one little desk with plants on it, and then you just see Charles, and all he's doing is, like, repeating infomercials, and, like, that broke my heart. I got so upset. But I think this is a really good ending chapter for the characters that we've come to know and love for such a long time. And, like, Jackman gave this his all. I really, really think this is an excellent send-off for his character. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if there's some cameos in any further X-Men films they do, but, like, this was great. I loved this movie. And I was also surprised to see Grant. And I was a big fan of Stephen Merchant as Caliban. I thought he was awesome.
Yeah, terrific casting overall. The little girl as well. What was her name? I just looked it up. Daphne Keene, I believe is her name. She was fantastic as X-23. She was just really perfect in that role, and they used her in just the right way. Like, I like that she doesn't talk for a lot of it, and the reveal that she could talk is a really sort of fun and revelatory moment, and her relationship with Wolverine is really poignant, and it is all handled really well. And personally, I feel like this is it. You don't need to make any more X-Men movies now. You might as well just pack it in, because there's no way they're going to make a better X-Men movie than Logan. This is just so well done. It's such a perfectly told story, and it doesn't copy anything, but you can see where it is drawing upon these ideas from other movies and other stories, and turning them, like, making them its own. Like, Shane, the movie Shane, is played on a TV and, like, referenced within Logan, and it's a very clear source of inspiration, but Logan is its own thing as well. And I was reminded of, like, Mad Max, especially Beyond Thunderdome, where Max meets these, like, feral kids out in the wilderness, and just the idea of this gruff, world-weary warrior having to become something of a father figure and mentor to a child really reminded me of that. And also Terminator 2. I kept being reminded of Terminator 2, where you have, you know, sort of this man with a metal internal structure and a small kid traveling through, like, these desert-like environments, and the apocalypse is very much, like, a topic of conversation as it goes, and also just peppered with these bursts of brutal violence, which really stood out, but I thought were incredibly effective. That violence, Robin, you were touching upon it, you know, it's the violence from Wolverine in previous X-Men movies has been really bloodless. Like, he cuts people up, but we never really see any blood or gore or severed limbs from his claws, his adamantium claws. And now that you actually see the extent of the bloody damage that Wolverine does, you really understand why he's such a jaded and grizzled character throughout the whole story, whole series. I think Logan, the movie, is so well done that it sort of retroactively improves a lot of the other movies in the X-Men franchise, especially the Wolverine. As I mentioned before, like, I enjoyed the Wolverine a hell of a lot more after I watched Logan, because you can now go back and trace the complete story of this character from his very beginning all the way to his very end. And the fact that we have, you know, 16 and a half years of X-Men movies and backstory, especially with Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart playing their roles, I don't think that background is necessary to enjoy Logan, but boy, does it bring weight to every decision and every moment in the movie. It's great. I can't praise Logan enough. I was super impressed, and as you said, Robin, I don't think any of the other superhero movies coming out this year are going to be anywhere near as exciting or cool as Logan, even though I am looking forward to Guardians of the Galaxy.
I don't know if this would happen, but it would be pretty cool if Hugh Jackman could get an Oscar nomination for this performance, because I do believe that it is, like, Oscar nomination worthy, and I always thought he was shafted for his performance in Prisoners. He really should have gotten nominated, but it would be such a great tribute to his character if he actually got Academy Award recognition.
Yeah, people are pulling for that. I mean, I don't put a lot of stock in the Oscars, as we've talked about in the past, so I could certainly see them doing it if enough people demanded it. But I don't know. That's a hard sell. I'll be curious to see if, come awards time next year, Logan will be included in any of them. Golden Globes. I bet it'll get nominated for a bunch of Golden Globes. And that brings us up to the present. Here's sort of a question to close on. Because both Professor X and Logan die in Logan, do you think there is any chance that either of these guys are going to come out of retirement one last time to reprise their role?
I really hope not, because they're both dead and they got perfect death scenes. So it's like, I think just bringing, and Xavier has also come back to life once already. So it's like, we really don't need to see it again. I think they should really just end it with these guys. And I thought it was perfect just after Logan's death, like playing Johnny Cash music, like over the end credits. I think that was a great way to send his character off. So no, I don't think they should come back.
TK, would you watch another movie with Patrick Stewart and Hugh Jackman in their X-Men,
like,
roles?
I would love to watch one, but like, the chances of it actually happening without defeating the closure from Logan, I think would be very difficult to do. I'd love to see cameos, though. Like, even just, I don't know, I think that would be, like, I loved, was it First Class where Wolverine's cameo was, yeah, fuck off? Like, I love that, and I think that, like, I would like to see that more than anything in upcoming X-Men films.
Well, as I said, don't reprise your roles. Just, in my opinion, they might as well just pack it all in. I think that this is not only a great send-off to these characters and these actors in those roles, but it's kind of a great cap to the X-Men franchise, because in Logan, all the X-Men are dead except for the handful that we see. And it is heavily implied that Professor X's seizures or something similar, some big psychic event that he was responsible for, killed all the X-Men. So I feel like this would be perfect closure to the franchise, where all the original X-Men are dead, there are a handful of mutant kids still out there in the world, so maybe there are going to be more mutants, but I don't know. I really feel like they should just put the cap on it there. So real quick, guys, let's have your order of preference. Do we want to go from, like, worst to best X-Men movie?
Sure.
Go right ahead, Robin.
Okay, I'll go with, actually, I'm going to put X-Men Apocalypse worse, even worse than X-Men Origins of Wolverine, because I thought it was even more boring than it. So I'm going to go X-Men Apocalypse, X-Men Origins, probably then Wolverine, then X-Men, then X-Men The Last Stand, X-Men First Class, X-2, X-Men Future Past, and then Logan.
TK, what is your order of preference? Rank these X-Men movies.
X-Men Origins Wolverine, The Wolverine, Last Stand, Apocalypse, X2, X-Men, Deadpool, Days of Future Past, First Class, and Logan is my favorite.
Wow, interesting. So for me, X-Men Origins Wolverine, X-Men Apocalypse, Deadpool, The Last Stand, X-Men, Wolverine, way higher than you guys. First Class, Days of Future Past, X2, and Logan is my favorite as well. I just can't top it. So good. And I'm very curious to see, obviously Deadpool 2 is coming out, but I'm curious to see if Fox pursues the X-Men franchise in any other forms on the big screen. On the small screen, however, maybe I'll just touch upon this to wrap up the conversation, but there is an X-Men TV series on now. Have you guys heard of Legion?
No, I haven't.
This is a movie, it's a TV series starring Dan Stevens, who we loved in The Guest, but he's also playing Beast right now in Beauty and the Beast, and Aubrey Plaza from Parks and Recreation and various movies that she's been in. And the plot is that Dan Stevens thinks he's schizophrenic. He has these weird, like, auditory and visual hallucinations. But he also seems to have some kind of psychic power that kicks in when he has his episodes. And the first episode is him in a mental institution, and Aubrey Plaza is another one of the patients there. And the whole thing is sort of like setting up his backstory, and we learn, you know, like maybe his episodes that he thinks are psychotic breaks are in fact something else, some other hidden ability. And it takes a real left turn in the final moments of the pilot, which I won't spoil. But here is the big sell for you guys. And I'm looking at you, TK. This TV series, Legion, is being overseen by Noah Hawley, who you probably know as one of the creators of the Fargo TV series.
That's very true.
So I recommend it. It's really interesting. I've only seen the first episode, so I don't know where it's going to go or if it's actually going to be any good, but that pedigree is really great, and the first episode is really good TV. Like, it does not, you don't have to tie it to the grander franchise to really enjoy it. So I recommend checking that one out. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. So that draws our conversation about the X-Men franchise to a close, and what an extensive conversation it is. And you know, I could probably like fill another couple of hours just talking about X-Men in comics, on TV, and popular culture outside of the movies. But for now, instead, we'll play the Ticket Price is Right, the box office prediction game, where we try to predict the opening weekend box office grosses of movies being released this week, and we also look back on last week's predictions. Last time, we were only predicting the opening totals for one movie, and that was Kong Skull Island. And, hey, I won this one. It made $61 million. I said it would make $50 million, and I had the high bid, which means that I am now at 3 points. Robin is at 4 points. TK is still out in the lead with 6 points. Man.
I'm in last place!
Yeah, what the heck? Robin's in last place. TK's in first. No, I'm in last place. No, I'm in last place.
Oh, okay.
Dogs and cats living together?
That was hysteria.
But lucky me, I get to predict first on this week's predictions. So we're doing three movies this time. First up is Power Rangers, the movie adaptation of Power Rangers. The only really notable names are Elizabeth Banks as Rita Repulsa and Bryan Cranston as Zordon. Did you guys watch Power Rangers when you were a kid?
Never. So I have no investment in this movie at all.
TK, were you in the generation that liked Power Rangers?
I mean, yes and no. It was a pop culture thing when I was growing up, so you kind of get sucked into it.
So it has a budget of $100 million, which is a lot of money, and I think it's going to make $30 million opening weekend. TK, how much is Power Rangers going to make opening weekend?
Let's say 25.
$25. And Robin, what do you think?
I'll go higher with 35.
35 million. Next up is the movie Life, which I kind of feel like it could probably use a better title. Not a very memorable title, but this is Ryan Reynolds, this is Deadpool himself, Jake Gyllenhaal, Rebecca Ferguson, and some other people I'm probably forgetting, and they discover life on Mars, oh my god, but maybe it's dangerous, it has a budget of $58 million. I'm gonna say $10 million. It's gonna make $10 million in its opening weekend. I don't think it's going to be very good. TK, what do you think? Are people going to like Life?
I don't know. I'm going to give it about 15, I think.
And Robin, what do you think?
I'll go a little higher. I'll go 18 million. It's got a good enough cast, even though it hasn't gotten a lot of promotion.
I wonder if it's going to fall victim to the Mars curse superstition about how movies set on Mars or based around Mars are inevitable failures. And then finally, Chips is coming out. They made a movie out of Chips with Michael Pena. I mean, I had no idea. I still haven't seen a trailer for this. Have you guys seen, like, anything about Chips?
No, it just kind of came out of nowhere. So it's kind of, I knew this was coming, but it's like I haven't seen promotion for it.
Yeah, I have not seen anything. It has a budget of $25 million. I'm going to go low. I'm going to say it'll make $8 million. $8 million. TK, how much do you think it'll make?
Like five.
5 million. And Robin, what about yourself?
I'll be generous. I'll go with 10.
10 million. We'll see. This will be an interesting weekend at the box office. I don't think any of these films are movies that people have a lot of investment in. Now it's time for the dumb joke of the week. And so guys, my X-Men power, my mutant ability, is I can turn things into glass at will. I just wanted to make that clear. TK just like logs out. So, if you want to get in touch with us, you can do so at the back row. You can contact TK by emailing tk@the-back-row.com. Robin can be reached by emailing robin.warder@the-back-row.com. Be sure to check out The Trail Went Cold, Robin's true crime podcast, every Wednesday that he writes and hosts, and I edit it, and our buddy Vince Nitro does the music for it as well. And of course, you can also read all of Robin's work at the-back-row.com, listverse.com, cracked.com. He's just all over the place. Be sure to check out The Trail Went Cold at trailwentcold.com. And you can reach me by emailing gil@the-back-row.com, and you can find all of the various projects, including The Trail Went Cold and my video editing portfolio, at the-back-row.com. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.